our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
So I'm going to spare everybody from hearing me talk about Robbie Ray again.
Oh, man.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
To quote one of my friends' way of speaking to his wife the other night, first thing Darius has to do is put the cuckoo back in the clock.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
We're just a few days away from actual baseball being played. That matters. I'm super excited, in spite of the fact that I'm still jet lagged from my trip to New York.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 245 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Chuck and Darius. Chuck, how you doing?
I am phenomenal. I am ready to rock and roll. Can't not wait until actual baseball games and setting lineups for real, etc. Looking forward to it.
We're just a few days away from actual baseball being played. That matters. I'm super excited, in spite of the fact that I'm still jet-lagged from my trip to New York. Darius, how are you doing, my friend?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Also excited for actual baseball to start. I've spent hours going through all the predictions for our prediction roundup over at Banished to the Pen, and so I'm a bit tired of looking at what people think will happen now, and I would quite like to get on with the actual happening of the baseball.
Yeah, me as well. I can't wait. We're actually going to do some staff predictions. I got to set up the doc and get everybody in on that, and we'll have that posted up on the site for posterity's sake, and see who actually gets kind of close to nailing some of the predictions for this year. And we'll be talking some staff predictions probably next week, because, you know, unless something major happens, it probably won't be a ton to really examine next week. So, but I'm looking forward to baseball. I know you guys are as well. But before we jump into our topic for today, which is bold predictions, I just want to remind everybody to give us a 5-star review on iTunes. If you do that, you will be eligible to win some of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear that we had made. I've got, I think, 4 or 5 t-shirts I'm ready to give away, and we were going to do that based on people who gave out good reviews. So check in on Monday when we give out the first one, and if you want to be eligible for that, go and give us a 5-star review, and if I read yours online on Monday, then you will get a free t-shirt. So definitely go check that out. All right, so let's jump into our discussion about bold predictions. Darius, you put an article up today. I've got an article up on FanGraphs outlining my top 10 bold predictions for the year. So, Chuck, I'll let you start with your first bold prediction, since we don't really have a way to kind of go cheat and look at yours.
Okay, well, other than the fact that I previewed this in our chat room, I do not quite understand the line of thinking that people have that Chris Bryant is not going to continue to get better. And I keep hearing on various forums that anyone who thinks that Mike Trout is going to be overtaken as the best player in fantasy baseball is overthinking things. But I just keep looking at stats and thinking about the fact that Chris Bryant is just 25 years old. You know, he just had his second full year in the bigs, where he cut his K percentage by 8%. He hit more fly balls. His OBP was up. His hard hit percentage was up. And I cannot help but think that people are underrating Chris Bryant, especially, you know, the multi-position eligibility helps in every format as well, especially as early as you have to draft him. I think Chris Bryant is going to be the best fantasy player in all of fantasy baseball this year.
Well, you know, here's what I'm going to say. I don't think that's bold enough for me, my friend.
I keep seeing him slip in drafts now. He goes 7, 8, 9.
Which is insane. I mean, the dude's an absolute stud, and I'm right there with you. I would not – I'm not going to say that that's going to happen, but I would not be surprised if Chris Bryant was the fantasy MVP this year.
I think he could – I think if things fall right – I mean, we've seen him go on ridiculous stretches, sometimes in spring training, sometimes for small stretches in regular season. I think he can hit 50 home runs this year. And if he does that and keeps the rest of his stats close by, I don't really see that there's too many people that can be very far out in front of him.
Yeah. Darius, any thoughts on this one?
Well, that seems bolder to me, Chris Bryant to hit 50 home runs. I would go with that. I actually went the other way in my bold predictions. And I think Chuck's angle is probably more likely than what I said, which is that he will be the least valuable player being drafted in the first round at the moment. Not that I don't think Bryant's great, but I think he was not particularly efficient on the base paths last year. So I think he could run less, which would obviously more or less eliminate a category from his production. And to be honest, I kind of wanted to do a first round one, and that seemed like the the boldest thing that I could come up with without just being completely ridiculous and saying that Mike Trout wasn't going to be any good this year or something. I just saw that there is room for him to go backwards as well, and I wasn't really aware of people being that down on him, but it sounds like you guys have maybe seen a little bit more of that than I have, so perhaps I'm not being bold there either.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen him slip outside of the first half of the first round in 15-team leagues before, which to me seems insane. I think dude is a top 3 to 5 pick. I can understand him, you know, being taken at the lower end of that, you know, top 5, but outside of that, I really can't understand seeing him really slip past 5, maybe even 6. I think he has a legit shot, and I think a lot of guys in the first round have a legit shot of being the top player in fantasy this year. Darius, why don't you give us your first bold prediction?
Okay, so I'm going to go with my George Springer one first, because I know a few guys on the site are actually not that interested in Springer, and they think it was just basically a compiling year last year, and I kind of agree with that. But I also think that this is a guy who gets on base a ton, and I think the Astros are going to be really good this year. So I've gone with George Springer will score 125 runs. Now, Mike Trout led the league last year with 123, and Curtis Granderson was the last person to get to 130. That was back in 2011. So I think this is a pretty outlandish total, but I think the Astros are also projected to score the most runs in the majors this year. And if Springer leads off all year and he can stay healthy, then I think you've kind of got to expect him to get over 100. And so I kind of just pushed the boat out a little bit and went for that 125.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it depends on health, I think, but I don't think that that is extremely outlandish. He had 116 runs scored last year in 744 plate appearances. I've been notoriously down on Springer, especially in average formats, because, one, he swings and misses too much and tends not to post very good averages. I mean, what saves him as a leadoff hitter is the fact that he walks over 10% of the time every year. I was huge on Springer when he was coming up. You know, there was a running joke here for a long time that I won't repeat, about how much I love George Springer. I just can't buy in personally based on the price for this season. So I think this will be the first year since his, since before he made it into the majors that I do not have a share. Chuck, any thoughts on George Springer?
Well, I think it's easy to like that, the depth of that Houston lineup. He's in a wonderful spot to succeed. One of my bold predictions later will also mention the Astros and exactly how racked and stacked that lineup is, how I like them being in the American League, and a lot of the pitching staffs and ballparks that they play in out there. So I don't have any problems with George Springer being looked at as an elite player this year. I just think he seems to me to be the kind of guy who's always going to have some really strong points and he's going to have some down points. He doesn't seem to have really put it all together. And when you add that in with some of the health issues that he's had, some of the lingering stuff that's happened, it makes me think that he is a very high risk and very high reward player all at the same time.
I mean, I completely agree with that. He's definitely a high risk, high reward kind of guy. You know, if he could just improve the stolen base efficiency, I mean, he was caught more times than he was successful at stealing bases last year. Stole a total of 9 bases, was caught 10 times. If we could get back to him, towards his 2015 efficiency, where he was successful on 16 of 20 attempts, and he continues to hold the power, then we're talking about a guy who's a, 30-15, 30-20 kind of threat on a base pass. I just worry that if he continues to be so poor at stealing bases, that he's the kind of guy that the Astros will just shut down from stealing.
Somehow or another, he's a very good fantasy player, but he seems to be an even much better reality player, meaning mm-hmm. that he brings so much athleticism to both hitting and defense, and you have to defend against him at multiple different levels. I think he's a really, really good player. I would just love to see his fantasy stats for a full season meet his reality value, which would be a phenomenal outcome for people who invest in him this year.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think there is a bit of room for him to grow as a player. He still isn't. He's only 27, and I just think if he does take another step forward and that walk rate goes even higher, then we'd really be looking at a huge value this year. So I know there's a lot of reasons to be worried, but I think if I'm going to be excited about anybody in this range, then I think Springer is one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, this will be the year he breaks out, because it's the first year out of the last four that I'm not in on him like full force. So
yeah, guarantee it now.
All right, I'm going to go a little bit deeper with my first bold prediction and talk about some guys that aren't getting drafted for the most part, unless you're in extremely deep leagues, AL only, NL only, the 50 round draft and holds that you see on NFBC. And I'm gonna say that Corey Spangenberg and Raul Mondesi Jr. will steal a combined 30 plus bases this year. So last year I was kind of a big proponent of Spangenberg as a sleeper, but unfortunately he was injured pretty much all of last year, and in that time Ryan Schimpf kind of emerged as the second base holder of that position in San Diego. I don't buy in on Schimpf at all. So I think that the amount of swing and miss in his game will eventually lead to him hitting the bench, and that Spangenberg will be the main beneficiary of that. He does have 20 to 30 base upside. He's going to start the year as kind of the as one of the guys who I believe will be kind of a Swiss Army knife for their team, a utility infielder, outfielder kind of guy. Then Raul Mondesi Jr. This was a little bit more bold about a week ago when I wrote the article on FanGraphs, but he was just tearing the cover off the ball all throughout spring training. He was fighting for the second base job. We learned a day or two ago that he would actually get the second base job. I know this is a guy that you really like, Chuck, as a real cheap option in deeper formats. So what do you think about this bold prediction?
Well, I like the bold prediction in general. I think you could have said 30 bases apiece would have been even bolder. but I think
I'm actually trying to get one of these.
Okay. Well, the thing is that I think the way that this has been brought up, and the way I found out during our staff draft that the rumors out of Kansas City were saying that Mondesi Jr. was going to win that job, and they felt like they lost a lot of their speed and athleticism in the offseason. Alex Gordon doesn't run like he used to. They lost Jerod Dyson, et cetera, and so forth. And they were going to put him in the leadoff role to run. Now, his stolen base efficiency has been ridiculously good in the high minors and at the major league level. And he has a very carved out role and niche right now within the Royals. So I think it's very likely that even if the rest of the numbers don't look very good, that he gets up over 20 stolen bases in and of himself. I'm a little concerned about Spangenberg. I was big into him last year, and this might be me being the scorned lover or something, because I was all over him last year. And boy, the nicks and the scrapes and the his failure to produce last year has me a little scared about him. So your prediction that they steal 30, I agree that they're going to steal 30-plus bases, but I think about 25 of them are coming from Mondesi, and I hope that I'm wrong because I would love the added depth in the stolen base area. You know, I want Spangenberg to carve out a niche and do better than I'm hoping he's going to or feeling he's going to right now.
Darius, what are your thoughts on these guys?
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. I'm kind of siding with Chuck, I would say. The Royals seem to be pretty keen to play Mondesi every day now. Ned Yost seems pretty excited about him, and as long as they're willing to let him go through those struggles in the majors, then I think he will still steal enough bases to probably make this come true, even if he doesn't hit that well, because he still stole, I think it was 9, even though he was only hitting 185 last year. So I think he can do it certainly enough to bring this up to 30, with Spangenberg maybe chipping in some, mostly as the utility guy. Who knows what's happening with Schimpf? I think he's definitely the kind of guy who could play himself out of a role in pretty quick time by just striking out 60% of the time in the first few weeks of the season. I could certainly see it happening, but I think Chuck's right that probably the better chance is that most of them come from Mondesi.
All right. Darius, why don't you give us your next bold prediction?
So I'm going to spare everybody from hearing me talk about Robbie Ray again. Because,
oh, man.
Unless you really want me to. We can save that for a bonus later.
we'll save that one.
Yeah. So I'm going to move on to another pitcher in the NL, and that's one from our favorite team, the Giants. And I'm going to say that Jeff Samardzija will outperform at least half of the pitchers drafted ahead of him. So Samardzija is currently 45th off the board. So essentially I'm saying that 22 of those other guys going at of the 44 going ahead of him, Samardzija will end the season with better value than. So basically I think he's just a durable guy. I saw some signs in the second half last season with the addition of the curveball, the improvements he made then. So I think he can take a step forward in what is obviously a better park for him than he had in Chicago. And I think he'll just end up by virtue of pitching all those innings, which he's shown he can be a guy who can pitch over 200 to pass a lot of the other maybe higher upside guys that we see going ahead of him who will either get hurt or maybe they'll just have sort of early career struggles and not live up to what we're looking for out of them. So I think he might not be the most exciting draft pick, but I think where he's going, he could actually be a pretty decent value as a solid anchor for your rotation.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Jeff Samardzija for this year?
Well, to quote one of my friend's way of speaking to his wife the other night, first thing Darius has to do is put the cuckoo back in the clock. Jeff Samardzija is a guy who's been in good situations for most of his career. He's a guy who manages to pitch a lot most years, but he's also a guy who's vastly disappointed every step of the way. I feel like there's been a downward slide in general that I doubt is really going to stop. I'm not a Samardzija guy. Of all of the investments that San Francisco has made in pitching, the last couple years of Lincecum, Matt Cain. I bowl with a guy named Mark Cain, by the way. But anyway, the point being is I see a lot of really bad investment in pitching money. And this is amongst the worst to me. I've left myself having very little hope for Jeff Samardzija. I doubt I would draft him if he was on the board in the 50th round of an NFBC league. So we are on different levels. I'm afraid to put him on the field, despite the fact that obviously he's got the stuff to do exactly what Darius is saying he's going to do. And every once in a while, these people come back from the dead, fantasy zombies, whatever you want to call them. But I think the ship has sailed.
I think
that's much, much bolder than I was.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I was like, if you want to talk about bold, talk about what Chuck just said. I mean, I don't know. I was pretty encouraged with what I saw towards the end of last season. I mean, I watch probably about 140 to 150 Giants games a year because obviously I'm a big Giants fan. You know, in the last 2 months of the season, he had a sub 3 ERA. He finished out the year with an over 10 K per nine. He cut down on the walks a little bit in September. I think there's some really encouraging reasons to buy into Samardzija, especially in the park that he's in. I mean, it's one of the best parks in baseball. Yeah, maybe you don't want to start him every time out, but I mean, a lot of the guys in the area he's being drafted in are guys you're not going to start every time out, especially if they're, you know, pitching in Arizona or pitching in Colorado. I think he is a guy that is underrated, that there is a little ageism going on. And I think for the most part, he'll be somewhat of a safe guy. Maybe I don't see the upside that Darius does, but I think he's going to be pretty solid. I think he's kind of a set it and forget it kind of guy. And, you know, at the end of the day, he's going to provide, a 3.6 to a 3.8 ERA with reasonable strikeout totals and give you 200-plus innings, which he's done in every season of in the last 4 years. So, which, you know, especially in deeper formats, you can't deny how valuable that is to have a guy week in, week out be there for you.
Well, as an aside, these older pitchers that make good money, when they struggle, they tend to be left out there for dead, which I really is something I don't like in fantasy, which means, you know, the years that Justin Verlander, when he struggled making his adjustment and being hurt, well, when he was out there, he's paid to eat up innings. So, you know, a young pitcher starts to struggle and they say, okay, well, we'll pull the plug after five innings. Well, if Jeff Samardzija, or in the latter case, Justin Verlander, was really struggling through five, trying to figure out a way to get them through seven can be very painful for the stat lines. And that's one of the things that I don't – that's where my ageism comes in on a lot of these older, quote-unquote, inning eaters. I would rather have the young pitcher get pulled off the mound after five to not waste his innings when he's getting shelled than see if he can find a nuance and maybe get a six extra outs at whatever cost that might be to your ratios.
Well, but I think the Giants, with the addition of Melanson and the other bullpen pieces that they have, won't need him to do that as much. I mean, I know the Giants had a historically bad bullpen in terms of the second half of the season, but they've actually got a pretty strong bullpen with Mark Melanson manning the ninth inning. I mean, you've got guys like Derek Law that emerge, Osik. I mean, it's a pretty strong group. So I'm not necessarily worried about that. I think they've got guys that can take it on from him from, you know, the sixth, seventh inning on.
Well, my Brewers gave you Will Smith, and that certainly worked out wonderful for you guys. That was when
isn't he getting Tommy John?
He is, so you're more than welcome to swear or whatever you want to do right now.
Yeah,
I would
thanks.
Completely understand that.
Yeah, no, I wasn't happy about that trade to begin with, but, you know, what'd we give up? A guy who's now suspended for 80 games in the minor leagues?
Yeah, that part is quite true. I'd still take him over Smith.
I would too right now, but at least that softens a goddamn blow, Chuck.
All right.
All right, Chuck, why don't you give me your next bold prediction?
Well, my next bold prediction is more of kind of an overview, but it is something that we've spoken of frequently on both the podcasts that I'm on for FWFB. My prediction is that half of the top eight shortstops will fail to have even top five round value. There is a ton of these players in this group that I am pretty skeptical of, you know, and they have very short track records. Jonathan Villar has had only one good year. His power is pretty questionable. Corey Seager, even though a lot of things broke right for him last year, his counting stats really were not very good. Xander Bogaerts loses David Ortiz. Correa took a step back last year. Francisco Lindor, basically, his offense has relatively come out of nowhere. He was not expected to be as good of an offensive player as he's been. I think half of the top eight shortstops that will be drafted will not have top five round value by the end of the season.
Wow, I actually think that is kind of bold. There's some guys. I mean, the majority of those guys are being taken in the top 30 picks. So
yeah, and I think that's a hefty investment into a position that we've spoken of frequently that is very deep. I like Justin's theory about Marcus Semien going way too late. I also believe that Aledmys Diaz is going way too late. Some circles now, Segura seems to be falling a great deal. So I think there's good investments to be had later, and I think investing in some of these shortstops who don't have very much of a track record. I mean, just think about a year ago, we were wondering if Xander Bogaerts was ever going to hit for any power. You know, now he loses David Ortiz in the lineup. He's coming off one good year, and now all of a sudden he's a top 30 guy. I'm not saying that it couldn't happen. You know, I understand the intrigue with these players, but it just seems like we are overly investing in players that don't have much track record to me.
Don't you think that that is a common theme throughout every fantasy season, though? I mean, we as an industry, and, you know, I'm not just talking about Friends of Fantasy Benefits, but, you know, just the entire industry as a whole tends to overvalue unproven talent.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's an offshoot, or it's three steps from Kevin Bacon from the Mike Trout effect in fantasy baseball, meaning that people want to catch these stars when they're on their way up and they think that they have this crazy staying power. I mean, Trey Turner is another one that can get lumped into this group once he's shortstop eligible. You can say to yourself, wow, people are really making a hefty investment in, you know, 100 games. So I think it's very true that people have this tendency to do this, and usually it doesn't turn out great. And think of some of the players that we're pushing back behind these guys, you know, that have 2 or 3 years, and we've seen them, and we know what they're like. It's pretty bold the way that we're drafting shortstop this year, and I think it's going to prove to be far too bold.
All right, Darius, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I find it very difficult to believe that any of the top three guys that off the board at the moment, Machado, Correa, and Seager, are going to finish that low. I believe in all of their talent to an extreme level, and I think even if they don't quite produce their draft value, I don't think they're going to slip outside the top five. I could see it with Lindor and Bogaerts. Maybe just, I know Chuck cited the fact that Lindor wasn't expected to hit quite this well, and he doesn't leap off the page in home runs or steals. So if he does get a bit of bad luck on the BABIP, and I think Bogaerts, they're talking about him batting sixth now, and that could hurt his value a little bit.
Which makes no sense, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's a great idea, but will actually do it, then it will cost him plate appearances.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't understand why the Red Sox feel the need to bat Benintendi second and Bogart six. It's absolutely insane to me, but please continue.
So yeah, I think those are the guys that will make or break this one, really. That, you know, if they could slip, I could see that potentially being not a terrible season, but just falling far enough to be outside the top five rounds. And then it wouldn't surprise me at all if Trevor Story just struck out a ton and didn't come anywhere near his power production, or VR dropped way back down on the steals front. So those wouldn't surprise me so much. But I think Lindor and Bogaerts are the guys who would make or break this one. And yeah, I think that's a pretty close call for me.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, because I do believe in a lot of the guys in this kind of tier, in Machado, Correa, Seager, VR in Story, and even Bogaerts. I mean, I've never been a Lindor guy, so it wouldn't surprise me at all if he fell back quite a bit. And it also, like you said, Darius, it wouldn't surprise me if Bogaerts took a step back. I think it would surprise me, as long as he's healthy, if Trevor Story does. I think what we saw from him in terms of power is legit, and I think he will steal at some point in the major league level. So, and VR, I think the amount he's going to steal, because the way the Brewers run, unless the Brewers have some sort of change in philosophy, I can't imagine that VR doesn't have a high enough ceiling that warrants a top five pick. A top five round pick. So I don't necessarily agree that this will or could happen for the most part, but I do love the boldness of it, Chuck.
Well, that's a good thing. That's what I was supposed to bring it, since my first one was wimpy, my second one needed to be bold.
You definitely nailed that one. So, let's see. My next one will be, and it looks like we're actually running a little bit shorter than I thought. So if you guys want to think of another, I know you've got a list to work off of, Darius, so that should be easy for you. But Chuck, if you want to think of another, and we'll come to you last on this next round, that would be cool, because we're definitely running a little bit shorter in time. We're moving through these quickly.
I'm on it like Blue Bonnet, brother.
All right. Here's one that I know Chuck is going to yell at me at about. One of mine on my Fangraphs article was Orlando Arcia is more valuable than a Ledmus Diaz. And this one, I know this one is bold, because especially where they're being taken in drafts. I'm going to pull up their NFBC numbers real quick. Ledmus Diaz is being taken as the 10th shortstop off the board, 148th overall. And then I've got to scroll all the way down to the 20th shortstop, 280th overall for Orlando Arcia. We've talked about on this podcast, I don't know if we've done it on this show, but I know I have, that I'm not a believer in a Ledmus Diaz. I don't believe the hype in terms of the of what we saw last season. I think there is a very crowded situation in the infield in St. Louis. And if he struggles at all, he could find himself on the bench. He's not a great defender at the position, so that won't keep him in the lineup if he struggles offensively. But for me, this is actually more about Orlando Arcia. And Orlando Arcia was a lot of people's hot stash last year. And people really, really overdrafted him in redraft formats for some reason. And I was the guy throwing cold water on him. He even came up a little bit earlier than I thought he would. But I think Arcia could steal 25 to 30 bases on this Brewers team that, I mentioned before, steals a ton of bases. I think he is a talented kid that will take some steps forward this year. And I think the combination of the speed and being in the lineup every day because of his great defense will eventually take him and make him a better fantasy option than a Ledmus Diaz for this season. Chuck, a rebuttal.
I don't really know that you're going to get a rebuttal from me on this.
Okay.
But I do believe in Ledmus Diaz, partially from the extended beatings that I've taken from the Cardinals over time, how they turn these marginal prospects into valuable players for huge stretches of time is beyond me. Now the Brewers have this great farm system, and we'll be lucky to get the kind of returns they get out of people that were left off on waivers and such. We're trying to get that kind of a return off of our premier prospects. So I do believe in Ledmus Diaz, but I also am 1,000% behind your premise that Orlando Arcia should not have fallen from someone that everyone liked to a kid that no one believes in for, you know, less than half a season worth of work, when, you know, there is a major league adjustment for most minor league players. And the golden rule that we spoke of in the last case is that Mike Trout needed an adjustment period at the major league level. This is not an unusual thing. People are wrongfully writing Orlando Arcia off, and when you look at his minor league numbers, there is nothing in those numbers that say that we should decide what kind of a major league player he is after a few hundred at-bats. That's pure silliness. So I would not be stunned if the Cardinals' offense is not as good as it's been in years past, and that can hurt Ledmus Diaz, and everybody likes all the positions on the Brewers are great sleepers. They even got rid of Scooter Gennett yesterday, finally. I mean, everybody likes...
R.I.P. Scooter Gennett.
Exactly. But everybody likes all of them for sleepers. Every single one of them. I mean, even late game catching, they like, you know, a combination of Manny P. Yeah. And so, and in that ballpark, and they're going to be in shootout after shootout. I mean, you don't pitch around people when if the Brewers are getting drubbed by 6 or 7 runs, which they will be on most nights because their pitching is that horrible. I mean, they're not going to pitch around people. So those guys are going to get, you know, fastballs down the middle after fastballs down the middle because they're going to be that far behind. So I think there's a lot of things working in favor of this prediction that you're making, and I can go along with it.
I mean, he only had 200 at-bats, 201 at-bats last season, 216 plate appearances. He stole 8 bases. He was never caught on the base paths at the, or has never been caught on the base paths at the major league level. I mean, I know you don't want to project out, you know, to full seasons of plate appearances, but if you were, you would be looking at a guy who's stealing 25 to 30 bases, you know, hitting, you know, 12 to 15 home runs, and he had an awful BABIP for a guy who, with his kind of speed, I mean, the last 3 seasons in the minor leagues, he had BABIPs of 312, 343, 326. Last year at the major league level, 267. That's going to come up quite a bit, in my opinion. And I think this is a guy who could hit 260 to 270, steal 30 bases at the major league level, chip in 10-plus home runs. I mean, that's a guy that has some serious value in the major leagues. And like you just mentioned, Chuck, it's a great park. It's a team that loves to run. You know, it's actually not a bad lineup if things come together. You know, what is going to suffer in Milwaukee is their pitching. Their pitching is just absolutely atrocious. So, I mean, that's the reason we're not talking about them as a contender. But would it surprise me if we're talking about a team that is actually somewhat in the hunt halfway through the season because of their offense? No, it wouldn't. I think the Brewers could be a sneaky team in the NL Central. They're not going to catch the Cubs, of course, but I mean the Pirates are you know, could have a down year. The Cardinals don't seem to have everything going their way quite at this moment. I think the Brewers could surprise some people, and I think Orlando Arcia could be a big part of that. Darius, what are your thoughts on Orlando Arcia?
Yeah, I definitely see the upside there, and I think certainly he's shown the stolen base ability to be a pretty promising fantasy option. I just don't think that he's going to be able to close that gulf in 1 year. I think it would take a pretty perfect storm of circumstances for him to get to the point where he was passing Diaz, not just in terms of an improvement in performance from him, but I also think he'd need to get moved up the lineup. Because like it or not, the fact that Diaz is probably going to bat second and Arcia is batting seventh is a pretty huge difference in terms of the counting stats. Diaz got an above average walk rate as well, so I think he'll be able to score a decent amount of runs in the Cardinals lineup. So yeah, if Diaz drops off the table and the Cards start benching him and Arcia takes the big step forward that we hope and hits double digit home runs and steals 25 bases, then I could see it. But I think that's a lot of things to go wrong for Diaz and to go right for Arcia before we get there. And I think Diaz's performance last year was pretty legit, maybe not 300 average legit, but not that far off it. So I just think where he's hitting in the Cardinals lineup and where Arcia is going to be on the Brewers makes this a pretty big gulf for me at the moment.
Yeah. You know, the other thing, you know, that I'll mention about this one is in my article, this one got like the most negative comments. someone like, I gotta find it real quick. So give me a second. Let's see. someone told me that I will eat my words on Diaz. It seemed pretty intense for a bold prediction, but I guess
I will say this also about Arcia. I mean, as a guy who watched the Brewers play every game last season, which was a long trudge to a cold and stormy death. The thing about Arcia is that Arcia really looked anxious at the plate for stretches last year, and I don't know if it was major league jitters or what it was, but he looks way, way, way better in the spring. And he just had a 2-home run game. He's driving the ball all over the field. I think the ball to bat skills are far better than he showed last year, for sure.
I completely agree with you, Chuck. All right, Darius, give me your next bold prediction.
Okay, I think I'm trying to resist, but I might just have to talk about Robbie Ray now.
We're
going to three. I mean, I don't think anybody who's listened to the podcast before is going to be particularly surprised. I just think that the strikeout potential is huge. We're talking a guy who can sit at 95 from the left side, and he touched 98, 99, which is ridiculous. I know that he's got trouble with control, and I know he probably needs a decent third pitch, or at least to do something outstanding with the fastball and the slide that we haven't seen yet. But I just think there aren't that many guys going as late as Ray who can jump up the way that he could if he puts it all together. So I'm predicting that Robbie Ray will be a top 20 starter. He's got the strikeout rate to do it, and I think he can have the innings to do it. So now we just need to see the other improvements in the control and maybe the pitch mix.
I love the boldness of it. I think you're absolutely insane, but I love the boldness of it. And actually, you know what? You're not that insane, because, I mean, you know, we're talking about Danny Duffy as a top 20 starter, and where was he, you know, coming into last year at this time?
In the bullpen, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, it could happen. And like you said, he has the strikeout stuff to do it. It's just a matter of if he can harness it and keep the ball in the ballpark. I have some shares of Robbie Ray because he's gone so cheap, and I'm willing to take a gamble on the upside. But, I mean, for me to invest in the way that you have invested this year, I would definitely need to see it first. He's not necessarily a guy that I can truly believe in. I mean, someone said it recently. It might have been Paul Spohr and Jason Collette at Tout Wars that Robbie Ray is the Michael Pineda of the National League. And I've been very critical of Michael Pineda, so it'd be hard for me to not be hypocritical and say that I believe in Robbie Ray and I don't believe in Michael Pineda. But I'm willing to take the gamble late. Chuck, where are you at on Robbie Ray?
I think I have a general skepticism of the Diamondbacks right now. The dumpster fire that has been the Diamondbacks ever since they decided to take on Tony La Russa, who decided to make Stewart his general manager. You know, I'm rooting for someone, and I like a lot of the talent in Arizona. I'm rooting for someone besides Paul Goldschmidt to really emerge from this train wreck followed by a chemical spill in the desert that's happened so far. I would be happy if it was Robbie Ray. For a while, I was pulling for Ruby De La Rosa to be back from the prospect zombie land that he was in. So there's a number of people I've been rooting for, and Robbie Ray has the most upside to do that. But it also comes at such a tremendous risk, and I have so many doubts about that organization right now and how many years it's going to take them to get back on track after the Dansby Swanson trade, etc., that I can't fathom Robbie Ray getting there. The beauty of this prediction is that if you buy into this prediction and you draft Robbie Ray and he manages to be a top 45 pitcher, you are getting a lot of return on your investment. So there's something to be said for that. I just, when I see people's whips that look greater than what I think Kershaw's ERA is going to be, that really, really scares me. My long-term dictum has been to believe the whip and not believe the ERA. So that's the part of this that scares me the most.
Yeah, I agree with you in that kind of context. But at the same time, Robbie Ray had the highest BABIP in the major leagues last year. And we're not talking by a small margin. We're talking about by a lot. I mean, a 352 BABIP was 13 points higher than the next guy, which was the aforementioned Michael Pineda, shockingly enough. And so, I mean, maybe, you know, there is definitely some luck that played into this, but there's also, you know, a ton of he has a hard time controlling his such massive stuff. You know, I'd almost rather see him maybe take it back a notch a little bit and see if he could gain some control in the process. But Darius, I take my hat off to you. That is a bold fucking prediction.
Well, and I made the Pineda comp as well in the piece, so I could certainly see that this is going to be a guy that in 3 years I'm going to be like, why the hell did I ever believe in Robbie Ray? But I think, and Eno's, your colleague Eno Harris has talked about this before, Pineda gets in a lot of bad counts, and then he just has to pipe the fastball down the middle and people crush it. And I think that happened to Ray a bit last year, and that's partly why the BABIP was so high. But I do think this is one of those things that if the control and the command does start to come along, then all these things follow. And suddenly then when Ray's sitting in those better counts, he isn't giving anywhere up anywhere near as many home runs or hard hit balls. And yeah, it's definitely a long shot, and I certainly wouldn't draft him anywhere near here. But I think the potential is certainly there.
I think one thing that we haven't talked about enough within the industry on Ray and Diamondbacks pitchers as a whole is the added value in catching that we're going to see this year. I mean, we've got Jeff Mathis and Chris Iannetta who are going to be sharing the catching duties in Arizona this year, and the superior framing skills that they have and game calling skills that they have, comparatively speaking to the catching duos we've seen in the past in the Diamondbacks in the last few years, should be an improvement for their entire pitching staff. So, I mean, it's something we don't necessarily talk about a ton in the industry as a whole to begin with, but I don't think it's got enough run that that Jeff Mathis and Chris Iannetta are a vast improvement over Wellington Castillo and Tuffy Gosiewicz's of the world that we've seen in Arizona over the course of the last couple of years. All right, I'll do my last one, and then Chuck, I will let you. I will let you kind of take us out of here. So let's see. Do we want a rookie one? Do we want kind of a crazy pitching one?
Well, I'm going to do pitching as well, so I should stay away from that one.
Okay, AL or NL?
Let's do AL as we. I just did NL.
Okay, I'll do AL. Bradley Zimmer will be this year's AL Rookie of the Year, and you know I mentioned earlier that I think Boston is insane for batting Andrew Benintendi at near the top of their lineup to start the year, and I think that will be a short run and short lived experience in Boston. Bradley Zimmer has a ton of upside. People are discounting him due to the fact that he looked really bad last year and really struggled when he was promoted to AAA. But he has absolutely crushed the ball in spring training this year. Was one of the leaders on the Indians in plate appearances and at bats, which is something you really want to see because that they're trying to get a long look at him. I know he's already been demoted to AAA and will start the year there, but I don't think he is going to be long for the majors. I think he is up very, very quickly. He's already the best defensive player on that team, and this guy has legit 20-30 upside at the major league level. It's never going to come with an amazing average, but he does walk quite a bit. Zimmer is a stud. And I would rather have Zimmer in a dynasty league than Andrew Benintendi. And I know people think I'm crazy for that, and I definitely got some heat in the message or in the comments section of my article over it. But Bradley Zimmer will be the AL AL Rookie of the Year. AL Cy Young would be really really bold, and people aren't taking him seriously at all. Chuck, any thoughts on Bradley Zimmer?
Well, I will say some things that are on your side here. I've never been a believer in the depth of the offense in front of him. I believe that as long as I have the right Zimmer, we're talking about the one that plays for the Indians, correct?
Yes, we are. Not the pitcher for the Royals.
Thank you. I get my Zimmers confused. I'm old. Thanks for pulling the geriatric through here. I appreciate that.
That would be Kyle Zimmer.
Okay, thank you. But anyway, the point being is that with the Kipnis injury, and you add the fact that I don't believe in Tyler Naquin's one hot month that we've never seen anything close to before that. I don't believe in Lonnie Chisenhall when your bat doesn't play at third. I don't know why it plays in right. there's enough questions. There's enough questions on this roster that I think that they could very much need the kind of offensive depth that he would provide. So I can see him being needed at a much earlier state than other people think. I recently took the prop bet on the under 93 wins in Vegas. I don't believe that the Indians pitching staff and their offense, I don't think their staff stays healthy, and I don't think their offense is as good as people think. So I think that they will finish under the 93 wins. I think they will need Zimmer, and that will help. That being said, I still probably would take the field just because, which is what makes it a bold prediction. I think there's a number of other people that could step up and may have a more pertinent role earlier on. The Indians are not a team that usually spends a ton of money, and so I think they're going to value holding back some of his service time as well, which goes against you in this prediction. But I like it. I will say that.
I mean, before I throw it at Darius, I will say that that Zimmer had 53 plate appearances, a total of 58. So it's 53 at bats, 58 plate appearances. He only struck out 13% of the time, which it was a really good sign for me. He hit, his triple slash was 358, 424, 660 slug. He hit three home runs, stole four bases, was not caught stealing all spring. I think these are really good signs. I know it's spring training, and we don't want to buy into spring training numbers, but especially the strikeout rate, to me, being so much lower than what we saw at the AAA level last year and even lower than the AA level last year, really, really starts to say good things about what he is doing with his pitch recognition and his swing and miss game. I really believe in Bradley Zimmer, and I have for a long time. This is nothing new if you've listened to this podcast over the course of the last two years. I've always been a big Bradley Zimmer guy. I watched him a bunch because he went to college at the University of San Francisco in my backyard. So I've been watching him since he was in college. I'm a big fan, and I think he will be a stud at the major league level. If you can buy him at any price, whether it's fair value or cheaper, I would do so. Darius, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I definitely agree that there seems to be huge gaping holes in the Indians' outfield that are going to need to be filled by somebody. I'm still not convinced by Michael Brantley. I don't know that he's proven that he's completely healthy yet, and there's obviously a huge amount of risk there. Lonnie Chisenhall's hurt already, and I agree with Chuck on Tyler Naquin as well. So I think they are going to need outfielders. I also thought this last season, and then Reggie Davis had a huge season, and Naquin came out of nowhere. So I hesitate to predict that that's exactly what's going to happen again, but I certainly think that Zimmer's probably one of the top four or five candidates just because of his power speed combo and the potential opportunity that looks to be there for him. Having said that, I think it's pretty risky to bet against Benintendi. So I guess that kind of helps make this a particularly bold prediction. I can see the path there. I just think Zimmer's got maybe a little bit more time in the minors than we might like, and that could be what prevents him from actually getting enough playing time this year to take the award at the end of the season.
All right. Chuck, go ahead and finish this out with your last bold prediction.
Well, my bold prediction involves two players, and it involves two elite control pitchers that I think are going in opposite directions. So it's a double-headed sword here, or a double-edged sword, I guess I should say. And that's Rick Porcello will finish outside of the top 50 starting pitchers, and Kyle Hendricks will finish in the top three in the NL Cy Young. Part of this comes from, track record. I've seen Hendricks multiple times live and multiple times on TV, and it just seems like he's always effective. Even when he's quote-unquote struggling, he's still been quite good, and his control has gotten very, very elite. And Rick Porcello is a guy who went through some really down years in Detroit, got traded off to Boston for, not all that much in return. And you add in the settings, like Hendricks gets to pitch in Chicago, where on certain days the wind saves him in and of itself. He pitches in the NL Central, where you've got teams that are in rebuild mode, and the Pirates Park, which is friendly, and the Cardinals Park, which is friendly. So I like his setting a lot better than I like Porcello's, and I just have a tendency to believe that people are underrating Kyle Hendricks going into this season. So there you go. Top three in Cy Young and NL for Hendricks, and outside of the top 50 starting pitchers for Porcello.
Darius, what are your thoughts on these two guys?
Yeah, I can definitely see both. I think Porcello probably won't strike out as many as he did last year, which still wasn't particularly elite by the standards we have in fantasy. So I certainly think he could slide down with a little bit of VRA regression and a fewer strikeouts to end up outside that top 50. It wouldn't surprise me at all, especially pitching in that division. And Hendricks is probably going to be on the team with the best record in baseball again. And we know that awards voters love to vote for guys who are actually in the playoffs. So it seems entirely plausible to me that Hendricks would be one of those guys under consideration. And I do buy his sort of Maddux type stuff. I think his control is excellent. And I don't know if any of you guys have seen, but there's some excellent stuff about pitch tunnels over at Baseball Prospectus, which go a long way towards explaining why Hendricks is a really successful pitcher without actually having the kind of stuff you might expect a guy like him to have when he's put up such elite numbers. So, yeah, I kind of like both of these, and I would not be surprised if either happened.
Yeah, I think the boldness comes into play when you combine them. If you'd said either of these individually, I probably would have kind of laughed you off the podcast. And, but
that's happened before. Let's be honest.
It's nothing new. So, but I think the combination of both of these makes it for kind of an interesting prediction. And boldness in itself. I mean, I'm glad you said top three in the Cy Young and not top three, you know, starting pitcher, because I don't know if Hendricks has the strikeout rate to really put him near the top three in starting pitcher. But the fact that the Baseball Writers Association loves the win stat and he pitches on the Cubs, if he can maintain a sub 3 ERA and get 20 wins because he's pitching for the best team in baseball, I think he easily could be in the conversation, especially if Lester or Arrieta struggle at all, and he tends to be looked at as a staff ace. I think he could easily be in the discussion for the top three in the Cy Young. And Porcello is a guy that we've talked about quite a bit this offseason, and I think a lot of us don't believe in him, though maybe the hate is going a little bit too far, to quote Matthew Berry and Nate Ravitz. You know, I do believe he will take a step back. I don't believe he deserved that Cy Young last year. But, I think maybe people are expecting to see more of his 2015 than his 2016. And I think he's probably going to be somewhere in the middle. I look at the depth charts projections for him, and I feel like they are pretty spot on with a 3.77 ERA, a 7.25 K9, maybe a little bit spiked walk rate as well, but I don't think he's going to fall off the map in the same way as what we saw in 2015. But I think those numbers would probably put him in the mix to be around the 50th starting pitcher. So,
I think it's an important note for people, especially the week of the draft. I don't know how you guys feel about this, but I feel like once you get down outside of the first 40 to 45 starting pitchers, it's basically pick your poison.
Yeah, for sure.
While I can say he probably falls beyond the top 50, I can say that in my head, I also am openly admitting that I'm glad I don't have to predict the five people in front of them and the five people behind them, because everybody likes one of these guys. Some people like Aaron Nola. Some people like Jared Eichhoff. Some people, like Vince Velasquez.
Those are all three guys I like, actually.
Yeah, and it's like, guess what? I hate to say this, Justin, because I have the utmost respect for you, but you're not going to be right on all three of those guys.
No, I'm not. I drafted all three in. It might be the staff league. I can't remember. But in one of my leagues, I have all three of those guys, and I'm like, I'm really hoping that two of them pan out.
Yeah, I mean, two would be great. That would be above industry average.
And there's a chance that none of them pan out. You know, I mean, they're all on the same team. It's not a great ballpark for pitching. But I love all their upsides. And was willing to take a gamble on it. It just so happened to all happen on the same team. I'm especially jacked about Nola if he can be healthy, but Velasquez has his own health issues. So it'll be interesting to see how it bears out. But yeah, I wouldn't want to predict the three above or the three below either. So I completely agree with you there. All right, well, that is going to wrap us up for this episode. Chuck, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It. I will be currently working on both some early season surprise articles and also these bold predictions, which I don't have written up, as well as my cohorts here today. So I'll have a little extra work to do in filling that out, so you guys will be able to go and see the staff predictions and track just exactly how crazy we are.
Darius, why don't you tell people what you're working on and where they can reach you?
As you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. Actually had some fancy content go up at BP Rigleyville last week, talking about kind of players we either liked or didn't like relative to their value. So I did a little bit about why I think Jake Arrieta is not going to be a great value this year. We've finished our season previews over at Banished to the Pen now, so you can go and read all 30 over there at banishedtothepen.com. And I will shortly having my predictions and projections review piece coming as well, where I sort of make sure that everybody's prediction is written down and preserved for posterity so they can't weasel out of it at the season's end. And we'll come back and tell everyone how they got on. And obviously you can find my bold predictions piece up on FWFB now as well.
And you can reach me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can read all my work on friendsoffantasybenefits.com or on the fantasy side of Fangraphs, which is called Rotographs. Over there, I did a continuing piece that I've been doing over the course of the last 6 months or so, I think in my fourth or fifth installment of my piece called The Unwritten Rules, where I delve into kind of fantasy ethics topics. And I had a number of readers and followers who submitted questions for that, and I answered all of this, or as many as I could, not all of them actually. And I'll be continuing to do that as people send me questions on fantasy ethics, what they should do with certain situations that have popped up in their league. So if you have questions, you can feel free to reach out to me via email. Or Twitter or via our Facebook group, which we have going on Friends of Fantasy Benefits. You can find links to all those within that article on Fangraphs, so definitely go over and check that out. Then I did a review of my Tout Wars weekend on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. That came out today as well and has been getting some good reviews as well, so definitely go check that out. Again, if you give us a 5-star review and throw it up on iTunes, we will be giving away free T-shirts to people throughout the season because of those reviews. So definitely give us a 5-star review. You don't have to screenshot it and send it to me. I will just pick it straight up off of the list. We're going to do some random out of the 5-star reviews, and some we will do based on what our favorite ones are. So make sure it's a little bit catchy and it catches our eye. Make it either funny or make it something that, shows us how much you appreciate the podcast. And we will be giving away T-shirts, some Friends of Fantasy Benefits gear, and then some Rec Room gear as well throughout the season. So thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.